As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Late night, midnight on the interstate, I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source with Michael Russo. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you're not an Athletic subscriber, well, what are you waiting for? TheAthletic.com/straight from the source will get you in for a discount. My guest today, Tommy Fitzgerald, the New Jersey Devils GM, fresh off signing Jack Hughes to an 8-year, $64 million deal. And we'll talk to Tom about that and whether or not the Kirill Kaprizov signing, the $9 million a year contract that he got for 5 years, even though Kirill is older than Jack and won the Calder last year, if that was some reason or a comparable that they used for Jack, but a big projection contract. We'll talk to Tommy about that. I've known Tom for a long, long time, number 21 with the Florida Panthers. I started covering him in 95-96 when I was a 21-year-old, let's say, know-it-all but really know-nothing beat reporter. Walked into the locker room, always put on this brave face, acted super confident, but deep down I really wasn't. And it's funny, when you get to be my age and you've covered this league for 27 years, you really look back at some of the players and the GMs and the coaches that treated you well, treated you like an adult, treated you like a veteran reporter. And Tom Fitzgerald was always one of them. You always knew that, like when you walked into the room, you always figured out the players that had zero respect for you because you were a kid. But the players that treated you, that gave you time, that shot the breeze with you. And Tom was always that friendly guy with the Boston accent that I used to always just sort of gravitate to. Line mates with Billy Lindsay, who everybody knows is Florida Panthers announcer and is on NHL Network as an analyst. They were Mutt and Jeff on that Florida Panthers team, number 11 and 21, and were first over the boards by Doug McClain and as penalty killers. And it was just a fabulous, fabulous team to cover. And he was a big, big part of that team. And I still remember where I was in 1998 in a strip mall in South Florida on a payphone talking to Tom Fitzgerald after he became the first captain in Nashville Predators history, and doing that story a year after I was in the Florida Marlins press box writing a story about Lindy Ruff leaving the Panthers as assistant coach and going up to Buffalo to coach that team. And the reason why I bring that up is, who would have thunk it, 20-something years later, the Devils GM is Tom Fitzgerald, and his old assistant coach with the Florida Panthers is now his head coach in New Jersey. It's amazing, the world of hockey. We talked to Tom, obviously, about the Jack Hughes signing, 8 years, $64 million. We'll see if the Kirill Kaprizov contract was at all comparable. We'll talk about, obviously, the old Panthers. We'll talk about his history with Bill Guerin from their days in Pittsburgh. We'll talk about his children. And a lot of other things as well. He's Keith Kachuk's cousin as well, so I'm sure we'll get to that. Hopefully everybody's been keeping track with some of the stories that I've been writing in The Athletic. Obviously the Wild are playing really, really well right now, 3-0 and on this homestand going into tonight's game against the New Jersey Devils. So I've been writing about that. This team has 23 goals in its last four home games. It's won four games in a row overall, starting with the game in New Jersey in a shootout after the Devils forced overtime with an extra attack attacker goal. But this Wild team is playing really well right now. Most goals in the NHL since early November. Second most goals in the NHL this season. Second most 5-on-5 goals in the NHL this season. And by the way, both those are first in the West. They had the second best points percentage in the month of November. And just getting great play up and down their lineup. Kirill Kaprizov absolutely on fire, 14 points in his last 7 games, at least before last night. That was the most in the NHL since November 18th. Ryan Hartman, Marcus Foligno, Joel Eriksson-Ek have combined for 30 of the Wild's 81 goals this year. Pretty remarkable. They're just getting great balance, great depth up and down the lineup. This is a team that's been without Matt Zuccarello, Jared Spurgeon, and now Freddie Goudreau was in COVID protocol. We'll see today if that continues or if he tests negative and can come back. But this is a team that has injuries, and yet they're just, you know, what's going on? John Merle goes up and plays top pair of minutes with Alex Goligoski, plays great. Jordy Benn comes into the lineup, plays great. Rem Pitlick goes up to the top line with Kirill Kaprizov and Ryan Hartman and is playing great. They have this depth up and down the lineup. And that is something that we haven't seen from a Wild team for a long, long time, if ever. That you could have these type of injuries or these type of absences in the lineup and really not miss a beat. And now things do get tougher. They have a tough road trip coming up. The Toronto Maple Leafs are coming in here Saturday night. The Maple Leafs have won 15 of the last 17. They just absolutely trounced the Colorado Avalanche last night, 8-3. Now Darcy Kemper is hurt. They've got a major goaltending issue now suddenly in Colorado. They've been treading water really throughout the season. They get Nathan MacKinnon back, but still get killed in Toronto. So it's just going to be interesting to see how the Wild now handle these real tough offensive teams that they're about to play. The Maple Leafs on Saturday night. Then they go to Edmonton that obviously has McDavid and Drysdale that's 9-1 at home. Then they go to San Jose. Then they go to LA. And then they, for the second time this season, play a second of a back-to-back in Vegas. So those are the type of things that the Wild will have to be paying attention to. But this team is playing really well right now, and it's been real fun to see, real fun to cover. Hopefully everybody's been reading some of the coverage here in The Athletic the last couple weeks. Wrote a really neat story on Rem Pitlick for Thanksgiving. Hopefully everybody read that story. It was a really touching story. Wrote about Ryan Hartman when he scored his 12th goal, and then the next night he gets a couple of assists. But, you know, if he's got any chance whatsoever of making the U.S. Olympic team, I still don't think he does. But Bill Guerin's running the show, so maybe that can change. One reason why I know that Ryan Hartman was never on the long list is that he has not been getting random drug testing from the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency. So that tells you right away that that he hasn't been on the long list for the United States. Now, that there is a mechanism for that to change, and perhaps it will, although I have a feeling that had to be done by November 30th. I'm not 100% convinced on that. I wish these protocols were spelled out places, but they're not. Wrote a really touching story also in Monday's Athletic about I think I talked about this on last week's podcast, but about a hockey player named Boris Hideki, a Slovak player that played for a team in his hometown of Bratislava. They were in Austria playing a game, and he collapsed on the ice and 5 days later passed away. And it turned out he was diagnosed with an inflamed heart. And what was really just unbelievably coincidental about that is that Tyler Nanny, Lou Nanny's grandson, the former Gophers defenseman, who, by the way, scored his first goal in Finland yesterday. Beautiful goal, by the way. He was on the ice for that. On the ice for the shift with Boris. And 5 years ago, as I document in this story, Tyler Nanny had myocarditis and first passed out during a New York Rangers development camp. Wound up finishing the scrimmage, and then a couple weeks later at a hotel in Wisconsin, thankfully at a hotel in Wisconsin, because he was at a family reunion at his grandparents' place. But there were so many family members that were staying at the cabin that the grandkids didn't have room to stay there, so they stayed at a hotel. Well, he passes out in the shower. His brother finds him, Louie, and he rushes him to the hospital, which just happened to be across the street from the hotel. And they had to paddle him while he was awake to get his heart back into rhythm. And it turned out that he was diagnosed with myocarditis. Obviously, didn't play the next year, and then didn't play the year after that because he transferred from Ohio State to the University of Minnesota. But he talked a lot about just having to watch this incident and the coincidence that this happened with him on the ice. And also, by the way, 15 minutes from Marco Rossi's hotel, hometown. So both of them talk about how the tragedy here, but also that they want to be advocates for players getting standard heart checks before and after every season. Both of them obviously have had myocarditis and think that it's very important for all athletes to get their hearts checked. And right now, it's not a standard thing. It's only a standard thing after you get COVID and have symptoms. Other stories that I've worked on this week, Mikko Koivu obviously getting his number 9 retired. We've been teasing that for really weeks in The Athletic that was going to happen. Koivu was really eloquent the other day talking about the honor, talking about, you know, told some anecdotes I had never heard before, that during a lot of the times that he ran into trouble or had stresses late in his career, that he used to call Jacques Lemaire up and ask him for advice. And I have obviously always knew that Jacques Lemaire and Mikko Koivu had an incredible relationship when Jacques was coaching him here. Mikko has always credited a large reason for his success as a player to Jacques Lemaire, but I never knew that they had that type of relationship where years later, Mikko would still be calling Jacques. So that was a big part of that story. So March 13th, before the Nashville Predators, the day after Mikko's 39th birthday, almost 2 years today from the last time that Mikko played a regular season game for the Wild and never got a chance to say goodbye because the pandemic interrupted that season, Mikko will get a chance to be on the ice and be honored by the Wild and say thank you to the fans. So, you know, a really interesting story too, because Mikko talked when I asked the question about the culture change that Bill Guerin has tried to make here, and that, you know, has been credited for a big reason for this team's success, this team's depth, this team's speed, and this team's entertainment value right now. You know, all the getting rid of this, maybe some of the older, slower players, the old guard that had been here forever, that had sort of, you know, maybe at that point tired to act and needed to start new. And Mikko represents that. And he basically said that, you know, at the time it stung when Bill Guerin told him that he was no longer going to be working for this or playing for this organization. But now he gets it, especially after watching so many of this team's games this year, the hard work, the entertainment, and how good they've been so far. The other story that's in today is a column on Jordan Greenway. Jordan's been playing really well lately. He was finally rewarded with his first breakout game of the season. 3 points, a goal and 2 assists the other night, a redirection goal that turned out to be the winning goal, and 2 assists. And, you know, that matched his season total. And you know, Dean Evason's been raving about him really for the last 3 or 4 weeks and how well he's been playing, especially since being reunited on last year's line with Joel Eriksson-Ek and Marcus Foligno. Well, he's finally scoring. And now the big thing that he's trying to do is bring that consistency in his game. And the parallel that I made in the story is Charlie Coyle, that Jordan has a lot of Charlie in him. You know, just sometimes it just feels like, you know, he can't bring it every night, can't be physical every night, and is just admits that he's not wired that way, and he's trying to do it, that he's got to work himself up to do it. And that really reminds me a lot about Charlie Coyle. It reminds me a lot about Nick Bjugstad. It reminds me a lot about when I covered Rob Niedermeyer in Florida, you know, and once we also with Rob Niedermeyer started to accept, all right, this guy's not going to be a 26, 30 goal scorer every single season. He became one of the top checkers in the league, went to Anaheim, won a cup playing on a line with Travis Moen, I believe, and Sammy Paulson. And so once he didn't have that pressure anymore to be a scorer, I think that he was accepted for being a real quality hockey player. And maybe that's going to have to be what Jordan Greenway becomes in the NHL. The problem is it going to happen in Minnesota? And that's the end of the column that I wrote. Is the reality is the Wild have a ton of contracts to re-sign, but not a lot of cap space to do it. They have Fiala, they have Pitlick, they have Kakinen, unrestricted guys. They have Nico Sturm, they have Alex Goligoski, Jordy Benn, Johnny Merrill, players like that. Well, all these guys can't be back when you only have $16 million of cap space and you've got dead money of 12.7, 14.7, and 14.7 coming up because of the Parisian suitor buyouts. They all can't be back. And Matt Dumba's got 2 years left on his deal. Fiala's a pending RFA that they didn't want to commit to long term. And Jordan Greenway is a pending RFA that's making $2.1 million right now. So some guys are going to be traded. And Jordan might be one of them, whether he plays great or whether he doesn't play great. And that was sort of you know, what I'm trying to portray in that column. So hopefully everybody reads that. But without further ado, one of my favorite people, one of the great accents in the sport, New Jersey Devils GM Tom Fitzgerald. But first, here's a word from one of our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, Fitzy, welcome to the state of hockey. Not that place that you come from, Massachusetts. welcome to Minnesota. I always tell people, one of my favorite Tom Fitzgerald stories is when you became the captain of the Nashville Predators and you were just having kids. I remember talking to you. I was in the strip mall in South Florida, talking on the phone, and you were telling me that your only hope is that that one of your kids didn't get the Southern twang, and that they kept the Boston thing. But it's pretty funny that how long you and I have known each other since 1995. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, it's you're a good friend, and you do great work. And you know what? I think the most important thing, Mike, was there was a trust factor.
Yeah.
You know, there was no agenda. There is no agenda when you speak to players, and you know we picked up on that right away, and we pick up on the people who do have agendas as well,
right,
and kind of stay clear of those guys. But you've always been one of the good ones that we've all trusted. And yeah, boy, we've known each other for a long, long time. And we look at both of us. We haven't aged at all.
I know, exactly. Yeah. You look the same. You look like you could still play.
This job, yeah. I was telling somebody yesterday, it's just you start losing your hair and it gets gray by the minute.
Yeah. Well, number 21 for the Florida Panthers, one of the greats. That 95-96 run with you and Billy Lindsay. And I saw Johan Garpenlov in the press box here the other day. Scott Mellenby, up until the news the other day, had been in pretty much every Wild game. Rob Niedermeyer, that whole line right there. I know that a lot of Devils fans are going to first want to know about Jack Hughes, and I know that, 8 years, $64 million. It's kind of like your first contract in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, term back in those days was give me 3 years.
Yeah,
I've got term. I've got security. 8 years now, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. It's incredible, but good for the players. You know, I think all the ex-players like before us, we don't begrudge anybody. We're mm-hmm. just happy, and we feel that we did our part as ex-players to help the future players, really be able to get deals like this. It's great. Jack's a terrific young player that mm-hmm. we believe in, and people might say, well, he hasn't done it yet to deserve mm-hmm. it, but the underlying numbers are fantastic, and in elite categories and elite people that he's mm-hmm. surrounding himself with when it comes to underlying numbers. Now, does that translate into real numbers? We believe it will, and we just want to get ahead of this.
Is that the toughest thing as a GM when you're doing something like this? Is that it is a projection contract, but yet the pedigree is there. We know how good he is. You've seen it. You see him up close and know his personality also more than anybody.
You're right, and I for one, like Jack takes me out of my seat. Mm-hmm. He really does when he has the puck and some of the things he does. And there's a lot of flash. We're going to be paying for the finish here moving forward. But he really is an exciting young player. He's not afraid. He gets into traffic. Unfortunately, he got hurt, but that was just a unfortunate incident where how he landed. It wasn't the actual hit or blow. It was how he landed after that. So he is pretty durable for a smaller guy. Very, very elusive, kind of greasy. He doesn't shy away from areas. And we believe my job is to surround him with people who can finish. We believe this is the start of something really good here in New Jersey.
A lot of Wild fans ask me if how much the Kirill Kaprizov contract might have been something that you looked at.
Not at all. We started to talk about what he hasn't done, but what we believe he's going to do. And then, you know, when you do deals like this, I have to go off comps. I have to go off comps. I have to go off certain 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds who signed these long-term deals and what they've done versus what Jack's done. And Jack's agency was, they're fantastic. They've been around the block a few times with players. So they get it. Educating, you know, the player and on where he may be at and what he may be, you know, passing up if he does pass this up and what he may have to do to make it up. CAA does a great job with their players. And Pat Brisson and I had fantastic talks, and we knew there was common ground. And that's the most important thing. And I think you look at the commitment that, you know, David Blitzer and Josh Harris have made to one, our team, and you want to put a product on the ice that is going to be good and sustainable. And then the commitment from Jack and his family as well to accept this and really commit to New Jersey. So I just hope I'm around to see this all come together.
I always tell Wild players that sign these 8-year deals now, you might be the only players that have ever outlasted me. I don't know how much longer I could do this. It's been a long time, 27 years now covering the NHL.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Fitzy, like the you know, how much of a hoot was it for you to draft his brother? I mean, you know, that was, and then to see his reaction, Jack's reaction and his brother's reaction when you made that big announcement.
Well, first, Luke, this is the reason why we drafted Luke Hughes was because of Luke Hughes. It had nothing to do with Jack Hughes.
Right.
And to be quite honest, like, last year's, where we were picking, last year's group of players that we could have chosen were all really, 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 really tight. I mean, you were nitpicking on one player versus another player. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we in New Jersey, we conduct some of these personality tests that we've created ourselves. And Luke Hughes just stood above everybody else when it came to leadership. And, you know, I just kind of looked at that and thought, you know what, like, there's zero downside here.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the youngest player in the draft. We'd like to think if he was born 3 or 4 days later, where would he be? He'd be probably the first overall pick this year. Puck moving, mobile, 6'2" defenseman that can generate offense. They don't grow in trees.
Right.
So that's really the reason why we picked. One is his talent. He's the youngest player in the draft, the upside. Two, the leadership qualities that he showed us. And felt you can never go wrong with these mobile, big, rangy, puck moving, transitional defensemen. Second, talking with the Hughes family after we drafted Luke, Ellen Hughes, their mom said, we sat all the boys down and and we just said, hey, if New Jersey doesn't pick him, we can't be showing our colors on.
It's like the Oscars, right? You can't show that you're disappointed that you were running around.
But we never talked about if New Jersey picks Luke, how to react. and you saw Jack's reaction and it was real.
Yeah.
You know, that was true excitement from him personally. I mean, I can't imagine, really. Like, imagine playing with your brother.
Yeah.
Playing a long time with your brother. Like, it's exciting times in New Jersey. And I know the Hughes family is really excited.
Jack, who, by the way, I think is just a fantastic quote. He's candid. I've listened to podcasts, but I loved his quote afterwards. He was like, we're just going to get Quinn here at some point. I think that's why the Canucks tried to go major term with him.
Yeah.
You know, to assure that can't happen. In Florida, you were gone, but I mean, the Pavel Bure, Val Bure, and those people love playing with their brothers, Rob Niedermayer and Scott Niedermayer. I know
in New Jersey, anyways, I know Lou, I've been told Lou was always trying to get Rob to come to New Jersey to keep Scott in Jersey. it's special. You know, I can't imagine playing with my brothers. You know, I had a cousin in the league, Keith Tkachuk, and it would have been fantastic to one day, you know, suit up with him. And but having, you know, a brother tandem is, I can't imagine, but these two kids are going to play a long time with each other.
You hit on one of my topics. I wanted to talk to you about Keith in a little bit, but I did want to ask you, just watching the Devils last week, we were just in Jersey, the Wild, and look, I know the Wild just literally got off the bus and started playing, so they probably had heavy legs, but the way you guys skated that game, the way your work ethic that game, it really, and the other thing that I noticed about that game is I was shocked at how many fans were there, which has to be a really cool thing for you to see that the Devils fans are starting to embrace that team. In fact, you know how like a lot of times they'll announce the attendance and you think like there's no way? That one, I was actually shocked that it was they announced less than it looked because they were loud. It looked packed. It feels like Devils fans are starting to embrace this thing that you're trying to build here.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that night, you know, the night before Thanksgiving too is always a big night for us, probably throughout the league. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I believe our fans are believing in what we're doing and are excited about it and don't want to be left on the dock and miss the boat on being part of it, whether it's season tickets, season ticket packages, things like that. And they're seeing what we've been saying. You know, I do think we're putting our money where our mouth is. And, you know, it is. It really is an exciting time in New Jersey. And our fans see it. We're excited. And, you know, yeah, we are a fast team. I think we're a fast team. When you add in Jack now, makes us even faster. But we're still young.
Yeah.
We're still young.
You sure?
We still have to mature to get to that next level of being very, very competitive. We're competitive every night. And what it's hard on me, because I'm so competitive, I think we should win every game.
Right.
You know, but one mistake turns into a goal. And one clock management mishap turns into a chance that turns into a goal. And the good teams don't make mistakes like that. The top teams don't. They know how to close teams out. I will say our team, where we never quit. The resiliency of this young group is we're down 4-0 the other night against San Jose. Actually, it was 4-2.
Right.
And felt we're going to get that next goal. We will tie it up as we pull the goal. Didn't happen. It's going to happen. But that's the feeling that I have. So when I sit in my box and I watch my team, I do get disgruntled at times because of the score, or we should be winning, or but expectations right now are to continue to grow and win. My expectations is to win,
right?
You know, not to lose games. But the reality is, we still have a lot of learning to do, and I think Lindy's done a hell of a job with this young crew and help them understand. Accountability is a big word that we use, and it's an action that we carry out. And it's the only way we're going to get better is, you know, you want to make a mistake. Hockey's a game of mistakes, as I've learned through the great coaches I've had. But if you continue to make the same mistakes, you're not getting better. You're not learning, and you're going to sit.
Yep, no doubt. And Wild fans learned at your resiliency last week when obviously they got a taste of their own medicine, where they gave the Wild, who have 7 6-on-5 goals, actually gave up one in the last minute and went to overtime there. So a nice point by the Devils, and then obviously the Wild pulled out the shootout win. I wanted to ask you about Lindy. You know, it's funny. I mentioned in 98, I remember talking to you in a strip mall in South Florida on the phone when you became the first ever captain of the Nashville Predators. I remember in 97 sitting in the Marlins press box writing about Lindy Ruff leaving as assistant coach to go up to Buffalo. And here he is 24 years later, still in the NHL. I can't imagine in 95, 96 and all those years with Lindy as your assistant coach that you thought one day you'd be hiring him as head coach.
No, not at all. Like when you're a player, you just want to continue to play. And as you start, you know, ramping downwards your career, you may think of staying in the game somehow. It's usually coaching.
Yeah.
Never thought managing would be in the cards for me. But quite honestly, I never even thought about it. Like,
right.
I looked up to all my managers, Bill Torrey being, you know, a great mentor of mine. Never ever thought of being in that type of seat. But you're right. You know, all of a sudden you're looking around, you're looking for a new coach, and you're looking for the characteristics of a person that could help you grow your team and where we're at in the stages of our development. And, you know, you go back to those days in Buffalo with Lindy and you look at all the young players that he has developed or helped develop into really, really, really good players afterwards, the Pominvilles, you know, the Drurys, the Briers, you know, I can go on and on. You know, Vanek's, these talented players that Lindy knew how to handle them, let them play and watch their skill grow versus just strangling it and conforming them into something that they shouldn't, dump and chase, you know, think players like that. But I just felt one, his personality is just, it's infectious. He lights up a room when he walks in. He's adapted. He's not the old core, hard, old school type of coach. Yep. Players love him. You know, he's a prankster, a jokester, but when he talks serious, they utterly just are on, they stand still listening to him. So he's got the command of the room, and he's got experience, and he's been doing a great job for us.
If he's never told you about the practical joke that he played on Brian Campbell in Florida when the Sabres were there, make sure he tells you it. I told it on a recent podcast. I reminisced actually with it, Marty Barone recently about it, and it is one of the most unbelievable classic practical jokes in the history of hockey. You got to have him tell it. And apparently Lindy was the brainchild, the coach of the Sabres. And it happened outside of the arena in Florida where he had the bus. I'll just give out the little part. He had the bus pulled over by Broward County Sheriffs. And Brian Campbell is a rookie pulled off. And you just got to hear the kicker. It's unbelievable.
I can't imagine.
Before we get to the Florida Panthers, because everybody that knows me in Minnesota knows why, of course, I had you on. Let's talk about Billy Guerin and your history with him. Billy Guerin, Wild GM, you guys were both in Pittsburgh growing up, getting your chops as in management and things like that. Whenever I talk to Billy, he has such great esteem for you. How tight did you guys become?
We're very tight. He's a great friend. First and foremost, he's a great person. Mm-hmm. I love the passion, his type A personality. Yep. I love it a lot, like me. I didn't have the resume as a player he has. But Billy and I go way back. You know, we had the same agent growing up. My one of my brothers played with Billy in juniors back in the days when he was playing for the Springfield Picks. Right. I happened to be playing for the Islanders farm team in Springfield as well. And, you know, he was a young kid. And then he got drafted, four or five overall. Yeah. And he knew he was going to be a hell of a player. But fast forward, you know, when we were putting the team together, when Ray was in Pittsburgh, and what we needed for that locker room to help really kind of push us forward with we had the talent. We had this Sid, Gino, Stahl, Letang, Fleury. We had all very young talent, but finding that older, I don't want to say grizzly vet, but somebody who can come in and really kind of just be themselves and have that type A and be matter of fact at times. And Billy was all of that when he came in. And, you know, we win the cup in 2009. You know, the next year, we disappointing postseason. And I don't know how many years after Billy played, but he really wanted to get into management. And he started following me around in development. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember being out here in Minnesota. He and I both flew out here. And the only car, we were going up to Duluth or St. Cloud, I forget. And the only rental car there was this bright red pickup truck that we joke about all the time. Every time you see one, we'll take a picture and send it to each other. But, you know, he was just hungry to learn. And then he just, what I loved about him was he was willing to travel and willing to go and watch and know players. You know, my whole thing was, if you want to be involved in player discussions, you need to know players. So you need to get out and watch players, and you need to go out and scout. And he was very hungry to do that. Yeah. And then you look at the branches that were coming off Ray there in Pittsburgh with Jason and Chuck, mm-hmm. who was there, and then obviously with Billy and myself, Dan McKinnon, who I have in New Jersey. Yep. First of all, a lot of good people. They're just great people. Randy Sexton was with us. So you looked at the experience, and but Billy, you know what? This is I'm very happy for him. He deserves all this. He's doing a hell of a job, and I think the relationship that he and Craig have is unique. It's fantastic. I think Craig's unique, quite frank. He's a unique person, and one that he's just a normal person, normal guy that you can go to and be open with, and he'll email pressure test you, which is right. Yeah. And I think that's so healthy. Yeah. So, but I think Billy's done a great job, and the future's bright here in Minnesota with Billy Guerin.
Yeah, Tommy got to know Craig during the interview process a couple GM jobs ago here in Minnesota. And then obviously Billy got the job on the second run when you didn't go for it. It's really amazing, like, when you think about it. So Ray Shiro brings you and Billy on in Pittsburgh. Ray becomes the Devils GM. He brings you there. you take over for him. Now Ray Shiro is here with Bill Guerin with Randy Sexton as his senior advisors. It's nuts the way hockey works sometimes, isn't it?
It is. And you know what? They're, being familiar with people is important. You know,
Loyalty is everything.
It is. Yep. It is. But you want people who can push you. You want people who can pressure test you. You don't want yes people. And Ray always said that. I don't want people who just say, oh, yeah, right, I agree with you. Hey, I think that's why Ray and I work so well together, is because we would really push each other and question. But at the end of the day, you walk out of the room, he was the boss, and you're loyal to that decision that he makes. But you just can't, like for me in New Jersey, I'm not looking for yes men. If I have a yes man, I don't want them. Yeah. I want somebody who can pressure me and ask the right questions, and you know, hey, maybe we think of it differently. And that's one thing that I've really learned with my organization from my ownership, is there is a lot of pressure testing, and I truly believe it's made me better and made me make better decisions versus just off the whim type of things. It's you really dig levels down versus just skim levels. You start digging and makes it makes you think about, you know, what kind of decision you're going to make.
Yeah.
So
no doubt about it. Let me ask you about those Pittsburgh Penguins teams. I mean, that was one special group that you guys put together there. One player that the Wild got from that team is Kalen Addison. Billy Guerin knew him real closely there. But that Pittsburgh team, like, again, just watching him right now, it looks like they're starting to play better. You're in the tough, tough division with, it's endless, the number of good teams you have in your division.
It's crazy. Yeah. We can't do anything about that.
Yeah.
We do feel we're in the hardest division, toughest division, the deepest division. We can't do anything about that. You know, anytime you have anytime Sidney Crosby is healthy and playing, and eventually Malkin will come back, you know how competitive they're going to be.
Yeah.
You know where they're going to be. But for us, you know, my hope and my plan was to, as teams start, you know, aging, they start descending, our youth starts figuring it out and understanding commitment to winning and start ascending. And hopefully some of these paths will cross as we're moving up and teams are maybe thinking about going the other way and, and maybe rebuilding.
Makes sense. You know? Yeah. And that has been a lot of Devils fans asked, you know, like, when is a point where you start to identify, all right, now we've got to you know, like Billy Guerin talks about it all the time. There will come a point where we make the big move and don't just build around the youth and things like that. Is that part of your thinking too? I mean, obviously you make the huge move to get Dougie Hamilton there and you're building around him and Heisher and Hughes, but will there also come a point where maybe you look for the goal scorer to go with?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You know, when is that? I think we're still a little premature for that. I think where we're going to make our hay is the experience of this core right now, and understand, you know, hopefully continue to battle for a wild card spot and then hopefully sneak into the playoffs and understand how hard it was to get there and to continue to go through the first round, how hard the first round is vital, I think, to any organization experience-wise. Then I believe there's how can I complement what we have? We do feel we've got a couple goal scorers coming, but I think the great teams do look outside for complimentary help, and we'll get there. We'll get there. I'm not going to kid myself right now on where my team's at, and we're one player away from winning the Stanley Cup. We're not. Mm-hmm. We're not. We're. You know, if I'm sitting in this seat in 3 years, 4 years from now, I'm sure. That's if you ask me a question.
Right.
I'm looking for that player.
When you look at this Wild team, I mean, you know, what do you think of the job that Bill is doing? I mean, he's made some bold moves. You know, real short order. He really rebuilt the locker room. You know, changed the culture. Mikko gone. Eric Staal gone. Devin Dubnyk gone. Parisian Suter. Not a lot of GMs would have the cojones to do that. And now this team is a young, fast, hardworking, entertaining team.
Yeah, he's done a great job, and it does take guts to make the moves that he's made. But you know what? He's paid he's paid to do a job that he needs to do, and it's helped rebuild the locker room, the brand, what it looks like, what kind of team do you want?
Yeah.
I will say they're a heavy team. They're a fast team, and you know, you look up and down your roster and you go, who is this kid? Like, who's this kid? Like, yeah. And I think he's done a great job to, but their top talent are producing.
Yeah.
And I think Dean Everson's a hell of a coach, to be quite honest with you. Like what he's doing behind these kids have bought in. They're playing a certain way. They're hard to play against. You're right. You look at their D and you go, we can use our speed against them, but they're efficient. They're simple. They don't overcomplicate things. They get pucks. They move pucks. That's it. You know, and they're getting great goaltending in Talbot. I mean, you saw the game against us. Like he was lights out. Yeah. You know, we did everything in our power to win that game, but we believe he was the reason why we didn't.
Yeah.
With that being said, they're a hard team to play against, and they're really going in all cylinders. Like Dean's got them playing a certain way. We know we're in tough tonight because of how well they're playing and where they stand and the confidence they have.
That's why I asked you what you just said. Is I was a little surprised that Talbot's not starting tonight. Kakinen did get his first NHL win against the Devils, but Talbot was so good last week. Let's talk to you about Tkachuk. I still have this memory of America West Arena in that locker room. And I won't keep you too much longer, but in that locker room, talking to Keith about you for this really cool feature I wrote in like 97. And he was just hysterical telling me childhood stories of you. I mean, you guys were, I mean,
kind of like brothers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's a Wani. I'll never forget. I was doing my thing. I was playing. I'm the oldest of the two families, you know, and going to college and then turning pro. And, you know, I think Keith's 4 years younger than me. But 4 years it doesn't seem like a lot, but it is a lot when you're growing up. You know, you're 8, you're 4, you're 12, you're 8, 16, you're 12, you know. And I was just doing my own thing. But I remember my dad saying, hey, Keith's trying out for the Olympic team, whatever, after his freshman year in college. And I'm like, really? And then I don't know how well he did or I remember watching, but then it was like, Keith's going to turn pro. I'm like, what? Like pro hockey? Yeah, Winnipeg's going to sign him and he's not going to play in the minors? No. Is he that good? I think he's pretty good, my dad says. And the rest is history. He was a unique player, you know, like you're power forward, who could score. And you see what his boys are doing.
Yeah.
But you're right. No, we're very close. Actually, I'm going to have dinner with him, he and his wife, on Sunday night. Nice. They're coming in town to watch Brady play us on Monday. Our families are extremely tight. I missed Thanksgiving this year for the first time since I retired back with my family and the Tkachuk family. Yeah, holidays are great, you know, with us. So, unfortunately, Keith doesn't live in the area anymore. But he gets in when he can. But just a good guy. I really do wish I had an opportunity to play with him at one point in our careers.
It would have been really neat. Such a good player and a beauty of a guy. he's a cartoon character, as I always say. I remember when the Wild drafted Luke Cunningham, I grabbed Tkachuk at the draft for that story. And honestly, like sometimes he talks and you got tears in your eyes. You know, he's just a cartoon character. Let's talk about Florida. It's been long enough. Wild fans are shocked that it's been this long that I haven't brought it up. So 98, your trade straight up for Mark Parrish. And I think I sent you a screen capture, like how weird it was like 2 years ago. Like, it wasn't straight up. but you traded Colorado and then you wind up going to the Nashville. But I still remember like 2 years ago, it like dawned on me how long I knew you guys, because I got a text message from you on like July 4th, wishing me a happy 4th. And then 20 minutes later, and this is like around midnight, I get a text message from Mark Parrish wishing me a happy 4th. And I'm like, holy crap. Like it's 2020. And I got two guys that were traded straight up for each other in 98. Sending me text messages, but those Florida teams were just special, and it did feel like the beat writers almost became like, you know, it almost became like we were part of it. Like, you know, like I'm every one of those guys I'm still tight with.
Yeah, well, again, we started this talk with, you know, who you are as a person and the trust factor, mm-hmm. and no agendas, and that's huge in our industry, you know, especially as players. And things You're a throwback, and I would hope the Wild players feel that way like we did in Florida. So that I agree with you. There was a trust. The stories that would be written were good stories, fun stories, mm-hmm. not stories about negative things. But those were great days. I mean, I you're right. I got traded. It was a terrible day for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was working on a contract with the team. Thought I was going to sign my long term 3-year deal. had dollars and cents already done, and yeah. got put on hold because of the potential of a trade with a certain player and a high quality young prospect. And then it turns out we're at a golf tournament. I don't know if you remember. We're at the outing, golf outing up at
Breakers, right?
No, it was Huizinga's course up Medalist.
Oh, okay,
no, not right. Medalist. I forget. Anyways, okay. The tee boxes were like
not the Boca Resort, right?
No, it was north. It was in like Jupiter, but it was, you know, the tee boxes were the Marlins, the Dolphins, and the Panthers. The three tee boxes the teams he owned. It sucked, to be quite honest with you. You know, I was there, I got pulled off the course. Actually, I happened to go into the clubhouse on the turn playing with Beezer, mm-hmm. Who was supposedly going to be on the move.
Right.
And we went in, and Chuck Fletcher, the management, Bill Torrey, Brian Murray, and Chuck Fletcher were all their office was built out of the clubhouse, and I got the wave in, come in, I want to talk to you, and the rest was history. I sat and waited for them to confirm what was going on, so that my group went on to hole 10, and I just waited there, and they told me, and I had to get into a car with Randy Moeller, and he took me back to Boca, where I lived. Actually took me back to Pompano, got my equipment, and I was on a flight later that night, or maybe early in the morning, and I had to leave my two young, you know, I had two young boys. It's being traded stinks. You know, but it opened up another chapter in my life, and that was, you know, becoming a free agent and becoming the first ever captain of the Nashville Predators, which I would never change in the world. I wouldn't change it for anything. My dad always says, one door closes, another one opens up. So, but the days, really what I try to push forward in Nashville was how the veterans led and how they treated the younger players. And I felt I wanted to do that in Nashville. The Brian Scrudlins, the Mike Huffs, the Mike Foligno's, you know, the Browns, the Sorellas. I mean, I can go on and on.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to be. And I tried so hard to be that, you know, it almost hurt my play on the ice because I was so consumed about being somebody off the ice. And Barry grabbed me one day and just said, I just need you to be you. You're here for a reason. And I like to think I helped lay some bricks there in Nashville for the success they've had. And, you know, moving forward culture-wise, you know, locker room and what's the expectations.
I remember how emotional it was. The first ever national game was against Florida, right? I mean, it's crazy. A 1-0 game, Ray Whitney breakaway. You mentioned Mike Foligno. How much is Marcus like Mike? I mean, because Marcus has become such an impactful player on this team. It's unbelievable. He's basically a coach, too. You know, I wrote about it today.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know Marcus. I do remember seeing Marcus in diapers walking around when we all lived in Boca Point.
In Panache.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, mom and stepfather lived in there until they moved to Atlanta. It's crazy. I used to walk by your house once. Well, after you left, it's funny.
Isn't that funny? I hear great things about Marcus's character and you know what he is, and he's a throwback player.
He really is.
He's physical. He's got skill. You know, he's a first rounder for a reason. But you know what guys like that do for the locker room and experience is really where teams make their hay and can move forward is because you got to have those guys. I say it a lot with us. Yeah, I don't want to keep trading away the men of my locker room, but eventually you got to bring in some men to really help shape and form, like Billy Guerin did with that young crew in Pittsburgh.
Last couple questions for you, I swear. But that 96 team, you know, Doug McClain, the coach, he had a great, every guy on that team. I mean, Jovo and Rhett Warner and Svela and Gord Murphy and Paul Laws. I mean, it was a heck of a team. Huff and Hull and Lowry and your Stu Barnes, your best friend, Billy Lindsay, you know, I mean, who basically, I don't know how, if you ever see him now, since he basically, I know, but he does a lot of NHL Network. And it's right around your studio. Yeah. But I mean, that was one special group, and to go to the Stanley Cup final your third year when nobody ever could have expected that.
No, we didn't. We knew we were good. We were well coached with Roger. We were committed to playing a certain style and understood how we were going to be successful. We had great goaltending in Beezer, and when Beezer was out, Mark Fitzpatrick was really a good goalie as well. And We just had quality people, yeah. You know, and I remember our first training camp in 93,
yeah.
Down in Doral, yep. Country Club, Bobby Clark, who a lot of people don't remember. It was our first GM there.
Right.
He just said, we're not going to be a doormat like the Ottawa Senators the year before. We're not going to be a doormat for the league. And if you think this is going to be, hey, you're just going to go out and play and take the results, then get the F out, you know, and it really stuck with a lot of us. But I think Brian Murray in particular made some really good moves, you know, getting Stu Barnes for Randy Gillen, you know, bringing in Robert Svale, who no one knew, who was this Slovakian kid, you know, talking, you know, keeping Beezer, keeping Terry Kartner, for example, you know, drafting Jovo. We just had a really good mix of guys, but we enjoyed playing for each other. Yeah. It was a great environment. I think Doug did a great job because he inherited a very committed team away from the puck, but what he did is allow us to play forecheck harder, you know, continue on your forecheck, use your speed, where before it was like stop, let them set up behind the net, we'll trap them to death, and he kind of loosened the reins and it created, you know, puck turnovers, and then we were playing in the offensive zone more, and everything came together. It really did. And you know what, to be honest with you, that year when we went to the playoffs, I remember sitting down, well, I remember Doug calling me when he took over and said, so you play right wing, and I said, no, I play center, but you play right wing, right? And I'm like, I can play right wing. He goes, okay, because you're going to play right wing. And I said, okay. I played right wing all year, that third year. Yeah. And then we got to the playoffs. He called me in his office and said, we're going to play at center. Uh-huh. And I said, really? Yeah, we're going to have two centers that are going to go after every team's top lines. Yeah. Brian Skrulin's going to go after. He's going to start. And then we're going to come back with you because they may stay out there for a minute. I don't want Brian out there for a minute. And you're going to eat up the next 30, 45 seconds. Yeah. And that was the strategy that year for us up front. And things just aligned. And I felt every single series somebody different put the cape on. And they call the cape the Superman cape because everything they did was strong and well. You look at Stu's line in the first round, you know, Billy obviously scores the winning goal. That was Boston.
Schooling Ray Bourque.
Yeah, right? You know, like there was every line really was the focus of that series. Yeah. You know, it was Stu's line with Pye and Ray Shepard against the Flyers. Then it was, you know, Mike Huff and Screwy's line played big goals against the Bruins or the Flyers. And then our line against Pittsburgh, you know, everything just fell into place. And then we ran into the Colorado Avalanche, who were actually really good. but I do tell people, we may have gotten swept, but there was no way that was a 4-0 series.
No, you're absolutely right. And that, especially game four, that game, you would crew up with the winner. Just lastly, how did they embrace you in Pittsburgh? Because it was you that put the dagger in that, superstar team of Lemieux and Jagr and all those guys, but it was Tom Fitzgerald that scored the Prince of Wales clinching goal in game seven.
Yeah, and even going back to my former team, the Islanders, and we beat that team, which Kevin Stevens, who's a great friend, would tell us that was probably their best team, and they were going for the three-peat, and our little Islander team, you know, beat them in game seven. And you know what, I think people didn't realize who I was, and then this is the guy who played, and but
is that the guy that slapped shot over the blue line, right?
Game seven, inside the blue line. But you know what, people in Pitt, my 8 years there, or nine years, I don't even know how long I was there, treated me great.
Yeah.
You know, they treated me with, you know, like I was one of them, and that's all that mattered for me. And I had great times there, you know, and I had some success on the ice against the Penguins, and I definitely felt some great success off the ice as well.
And lastly, just how's the family? You know, you got kids playing, all that stuff.
They're great. You know, my two older boys, Ryan and Casey, were both born in Boca.
Yeah.
So they're Florida babies, and both were drafted. Ryan was drafted by the Bruins, but he's no longer, he's with the Flyers organization right now. He's out, double hip surgery.
Philippon did the surgery, or no?
I don't know who did it. Okay. Someone in, he had two, actually, abdomen and both hips done. And but he's on the mend. But he's doing great. Casey's drafted by Buffalo. I think he's knocking on the door here, you know, for games. So My third son, Jack, was born in Nashville. He's a senior in college, doing great things as well. And my youngest, Brendan, who's Canadian, he was born in Toronto when I played for the Leafs, is playing out in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, playing for the Rough Riders. And he's going to go off to the University of New Hampshire and play hockey and see where his career goes. But awesome. My wife, Carrie, is doing awesome. Yeah. She's really, I tell people, she's the CEO of our household and our business. And her and our dog Millie are just kind of living alone right now with everybody gone. Because I'm in New Jersey, she'll come down and visit me. Mm-hmm. We still own our house in Boston, and but everybody's doing great. You know, we're all loving life. Everybody's knock on wood doing well, and family's everything.
Yeah. Kevin Adams, the Buffalo GM, another guy I was tight with in Florida, just a great guy too. So hopefully, we'll give your son a shot here in the next little bit. I'll give him throw him a text.
I hope so. I need him to give me a heads up so I can get, my wife and I can get there to watch it whenever that happens.
I'll tell you, you mentioned longevity. It's amazing how many guys I covered that are in management and coaching, and now suddenly I'm covering a father and son. I covered Lance Pitlick in Florida and Rem Pitlick here. It's crazy. And I'm thinking getting old, it's pretty crazy. Hey, Fitzy, always a pleasure. I can't wait to that first Minnesota New Jersey trade at some point here. Wild fans were joking to me on Twitter, like, ask Tom, it seems like they have way too many young centers. Maybe the Wild, you could throw one to the Wild. So
I think Billy will call you at some point. Thanks for Tom.
Awesome. Yeah. Great seeing you. Great talking with you. You're a good friend.
Appreciate it. So my thanks to Tom Fitzgerald for joining Straight from the Source. Big week ahead for the Minnesota Wild. They play, obviously, the Devils here tonight in Minnesota. Then they wrap up the 5-game homestand on Saturday night against the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs just absolutely trounced the Colorado Avalanche 8-3 last night. Darcy Kemper is hurt, so that is going to be a problem for an Avalanche team that has really been treading water for a lot of the year. They get Nathan MacKinnon back, but yet they still get killed in Toronto. And this Toronto team is an absolute juggernaut right now, 15-2 in their last 17 games. So that will be the first real big test for the Minnesota Wild, since especially they went to Florida a couple weeks ago and played a really quality second and third periods, but weren't able to get the regulation win or get to overtime. And obviously the Wild have gone 1-0-1 against the Tampa Bay Lightning in the last couple weeks, but this will be a huge test for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But the tests continue coming up. 4-game road trip coming on, starting in Edmonton. The Edmonton Oilers 9-1 on home ice. Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, they've been really awesome and dominant on home ice. So that these are two huge tests in a row coming up for the Wild. Hopefully they don't look past the New Jersey Devils, though, to start things off. And then that road trip that starts in Edmonton continues with a game in San Jose, then a game in Los Angeles, and then another second of a back-to-back in Vegas this season. And the first one was not one of their finest games of the season, that's for sure. Some cool stories in the works. I'll be talking to Judd Brackett, the Wild's director of amateur scouting, on Friday for a story that I'll be writing early next week. It's sort of an update on all the prospects, but really some of these really quality kids the Wild have had invited to some of these World Junior camps, particularly Canada, with three defensemen, Carson Lambos, Damon Hunt, whose stock is absolutely skyrocketing, and Ryan O'Rourke, the Sioux Greyhounds captain. We saw all these guys in training camp, and they looked really, really good. So those are the stories that are sort of in the works, and a lot of road games coming up again. As the team finally gets back on the road after a little brief return home here, but finally a chance to unpack for this homestand. Lots of podcasts throughout our network here at The Athletic. Former NHLer Sean Thornton joins Craig Custance and Sean Gentile this week on The Athletic Hockey Show, and Rob Pizzo from CBC Sports hosts the Wednesday Roundtable along with Sarah Sivian, Jesse Granger, and the special guest, Julia McKenzie, one of our greatest editors at The Athletic. That will be this Wednesday on The Athletic Hockey Show as well. And then, of course, you've listened to Tom Fitzgerald today. Thanks for listening to Straight from the Source. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to leave a rating and review. Subscribe to The Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all bonus content from our entire network. You can start with a 30-day free trial, then just 99 cents a month after that. And right now, you can get an annual subscription to The Athletic for just $3.99 a month when you visit theathletic.com/straight from the source. Talk to you next week, everybody.